Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. This is Laura D. from Galloway, New Jersey.
Thank you. I am Laura, and I am an alcoholic. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or mood-altering substance since September 19th of 1993, and for that I am so very grateful, so very grateful. I want to also express my gratitude to Dave and Jess and Wally, who came down to Galloway yesterday. We have a brand-new pocket of enthusiasm. We're about 6 months old. My home group is the Vision for You Solutions Speaker Meeting. And Galloway is about 20 minutes west of Atlantic City, so if ever you want to come down the shore and enjoy a nice time at the shore on a Sunday, we would love to see you. We meet from 5 until 6 in the afternoon, so that's plenty of time to get home. I'd like to ask you to just join me in a moment of silence. I'm real nervous always before I speak, and I just want to ask God to help me say something that may help somebody and to open people's ears that they may hear something that might be helpful. Thank you. It's such an honor to be here, really. It's such an honor. I'd like to tell my story, and I'd like to tell it in the framework of the 12 steps, because it's really the 12 steps that absolutely transformed my life. And I was fortunate in that I found a solution sponsor about 2.5 years into AA. And I've heard of stories of people that it's taken them much longer. And I'm grateful that happened to me relatively new in recovery. And I'd like to tell my story within that framework because I was a real slow starter. I was a real slow learner. You can see if I came in 1993, I wasn't a spring chicken when I came in here, okay? A lot of times I say I wish I'd found this program 30 years earlier. What an incredible life I would have had. But I'm having an incredible life now, so I'm real grateful. Step one, I was taught, is the problem, okay? I'm powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. And you could not convince me for anything that I was powerless over alcohol. And don't tell me my life is unmanageable. I have it all together, okay? It was really my attitude for a lot of years. My drinking history starts at a reasonable age, I guess, unless you're going to count the whiskey on the gums when you're teething or, you know, something crazy like that. But my first drink was at Sweet 16, okay? I had a date for Valentine's Day. It was my first real boyfriend. I grew up in North Jersey, metropolitan New York. I was going to go into Manhattan to a fancy restaurant. I was like, oh, on top of the world. This is my first real boyfriend. He was an older man. I think he was 17 or 18 or something like that, okay? And he stood me up. He didn't show up, okay? Can you believe? And my parents had some place to go that night. There was a party with their friends, a Valentine's Day party, and they were going. And my dad wouldn't leave until my date came to pick me up. And as the time, you know, progressed, and it became clear to everybody except me that this guy wasn't showing, they weren't going to leave me home alone, because when the reality finally hit that this guy wasn't showing, I was just absolutely crushed. So they decided in their wisdom to take me along to their party, okay? So here's a bunch of adults. I'm the only kid there, okay? Really comfortable, right? And there's an open bar, and nobody's watching me, okay? And I had a drink. And immediately, I liked the effect. It dulled the pain that I was having. So I had another one, okay, and another one. And again, nobody was watching me until I was blacked out. I mean, I blacked out right from the first. I have gray-out memories of spilling a drink and making a mess and then starting to cry and wail in front of everybody and, you know, just making a general scene, okay? My folks weren't real pleased. So we left early. I remembered some of it the next day. And you would think with an experience like that, I would say, hey, this wasn't not a lot of fun, okay? But that's not what happened, as we all know. I didn't drink, I don't think, again in high school. I mean, my parents were old-fashioned Italian. They watched me like a hawk. I mean, that that incident certainly didn't repeat itself. But once I went away to college, I had a newfound freedom, as they say. And I drank. I blacked out almost every time, okay? I thought this was part of being a liberated woman, okay? I thought I was having a lot of fun. But then I realized I was missing a lot. So then I started all those times of the science experiments. You know, how can I drink like everybody else drinks and not black out, okay? Do I eat? Do I make sure I have a full stomach? Some of the other people said, you know, eat before you drink or mix the drinks, you know, every other one, or drink in a Coke or something, or dance a lot in between or whatever, you know, to do all the physics experiments to not have this reaction, okay? And those experiments went on for many years, many years. You know, I kept thinking I'm going to find out how to control this thing, okay? Never could you have convinced me that I had a problem with alcohol. Never. I was an honor student in college. I graduated. I all kind of wonderful things are happening in my life. You don't tell me my life is unmanageable, okay? I've got this all together. My drinking probably didn't escalate dramatically until I got divorced. I was married for 10 years, okay? Had two kids. They say you can't control your drinking if you're an alcoholic, but it also says in our book, in the early years, we might have been able to stop or we might have been able to control it. I thought I controlled it pretty well. There are blackout incidents, but they aren't real close together, okay? But once I got divorced and there was nobody watching me and I'm single parenting from when my kids are 1 and 3, when I was raising the kids, I was mom and apple pie, okay? I was the brownie leader. I was the softball coach. You know, I wasn't a fall-down drunk when I'm raising my kids. But once they got to sleep at night and I'm all alone in the house, I'll tell you, I did drink myself out every night, okay, a way to deal with loneliness. And my ex-husband, before he got married again and again and moved out of state, he used to take the kids every other weekend, okay? So every other weekend was mine, okay? And whoa. I ran with some friends that were heavy drinkers. What a surprise. And there were many times where I didn't remember from Friday night to Sunday. I mean, I just didn't. And there were some incidents that were pretty scary. Once I came out of a blackout driving the wrong way down the Garden State Parkway. Okay. Now, fortunately, it was the middle of the night. There wasn't a lot of traffic. Okay. And the thing that brought me out of the blackout was a truck, boom, going the opposite way, blasting his horn, boom, brought me out of the blackout. And then I realized I'm traveling in the wrong direction. So I made a real quick U-turn. I got off the parkway real quickly because I know there's going to be cops coming sometime soon. Okay, I'm not sure how I got home that night. But that one got my attention. Okay, so I stopped drinking for a while. I could stop. I mean, don't tell me I have a problem with alcohol. I can stop. Okay, I just can't stay stopped. Okay, that's the issue. I just can't stay stopped. I can stop, no problem. Another time, I came out of a blackout. I was in a hospital in Newark. I don't know how I got to Newark, okay? I don't know why I would go to Newark. I wasn't doing business with anybody in Newark. I had knew nobody in Newark. I don't know why, okay? There's a story in the big book. There's a story in the big book about a woman coming out of a blackout in conversation with people in somebody's living room. She doesn't know who she's talking to, that's exactly my experience in this hospital. I came out of this blackout. I'm talking to somebody, I mean, who's trying to interview me, and I don't know where I am, how I got there. I don't even know who I am. I had amnesia. I could not remember my name. Okay? Very scary. They handled it very well. They low-keyed it very nicely and assured me that my memory would come back, and it did within an hour or two, you know, my name and whatnot. Lost my car, lost my pocketbook. I have no clue to this day. No clue to this day how that happened. Another time, I took down a telephone pole. Didn't bump into it, took it down. Okay? Flipped the car, crushed like an accordion, smashed in the top. There was a little cocoon of space around the driver's wheel. A cocoon of space. Okay? I have little gray-out memories of when the car was upside down, coming out of it, and people had stopped, and it was windows rolled. And they're trying to trace on the window the direction I should crank so they can open the window to get me out of this car, which is still running, by the way. And the people who stopped were afraid apparently the car was going to explode, that they wanted to get their hand in to turn the ignition off. And I have just gray-out kind of memories of that, okay? I walked away from that accident. I shouldn't be alive. I shouldn't be here, okay? I had a concussion. I had a broken nose. I severed my front lip. I have had some gray-out recollections of right before impact, where I must have screamed, and maybe that's, I don't know, whatever. But I walked away from it. I had a concussion. Now, I've been to, in fact, one of my first speaker meetings that I went to, that once I started in AA, a guy got up to the podium. He had lost one leg. He was on crutches. He was, you know, whatever. And he said that he was not an alcoholic, but he didn't have to be an alcoholic to quit drinking. But he had been in this horrible motorcycle accident and lost his leg. And he didn't believe he was an alcoholic, but he did have the desire to stop drinking. And he sat down. That was his entire share. Let me tell you, that got my attention, okay? That got my attention. I walked away from that accident. I'd like to be able to report to you that it occurred to me I had a problem and I should do something about it. I'm single parenting two little kids. My life is not my own. I can't do this, okay? But it wasn't until 13 years later that I finally wound up here with you guys, okay? I mean, I have a long history of denial of this disease. It is unbelievable. I'm single parenting two kids. I have a responsible job in Manhattan. I'm maintaining my house. I'm paying my bills. I have my car. Don't you tell me my life is unmanageable. Right? Right? I only drink a little bit too much sometimes. Okay? Sometimes. Not all the time. And I can stop. I just can't stay stopped. Just can't stay stopped. I like Fred. Fred's my favorite guy in the big book. You know, the accountant? I like Fred. I really do. Along the way, I started to go to AA, but I would dip in and out because I didn't drink like you guys. You know? I just didn't drink like you guys, okay? But along the way, at least I didn't think so, okay? Along the way, I would hear what you guys were saying. And eventually, I got the knowledge that if I don't take the first drink, I won't get drunk. Now, that's hard to argue with that, okay? And so I decided I would not take that first drink. I made that decision many times, okay? And that's why I like Fred, because Fred had that knowledge also, and he could never figure out how did this happen again, which was my experience as well. He talks about the strange blank spots, okay, that again comes to a point, the only thing between me and a drink is my God. Because no matter what knowledge I have, there's going to be those strange blank spots. And they happen to me over and over again. And I cannot tell you, I can't figure out how did it happen again. How did it generally didn't happen suddenly again. It would happen, you know, maybe a glass of wine with dinner or something, you know, and it would build. And this, I would think I was handling it, and then it would just progress and progress. And before I know, I'm blacked out again, driving my children blackout, my most precious children in blackout. Well, I'm coming in and out to AA, but I'm not staying, okay? So I was taught step one is the problem, step two is the solution, okay? Step two is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And what I was doing, I can see now, was clearly insane, although I couldn't see it at the time, okay? I couldn't see it at the time. So what made me stay, you may ask, okay, with all these years of in and out, in and out, in and out? Well, one thing that helped me to stay, didn't make me, but helped me to stay, was, you know, I would come and, like you announced at this meeting, there were people there that they wanted to help you if they were new, and they'd try to hook you up with another woman to help you along. And one of these women that hooked up with me, she listened to me talking about I only drink a little bit too much sometimes. Blah, blah. So she said, but she listened to some of these incidents that I'm telling you about. She said, how often did these happen? Not very often. So she said, why don't you put them on a timeline? What do you mean a timeline? I don't have dates. Well, try to figure it out by, you know, the age of your kids or what job you had at the time or what boyfriend you had at the time. Try to get it on a timeline to take a look at when did these very scary things happen or very embarrassing things or very whatever. When did they happen? And I am visual. So by putting it on the timeline, I could see that in those early years, just as our book says, these incidents were far apart. And I would stop drinking and not drink for long intervals. But as I looked at this timeline, literally, these incidents got closer and closer and closer together until they were happening all the time. Now, that caught my attention because I didn't know this is a progressive disease, okay? And that timeline of my own incidents helped convince me it is a progressive disease. Okay, so that helped me. That helped me. Another thing that helped me, I was blessed to come into recovery with a prayer life, okay? I didn't always have it, okay? I'm one of those people that was raised with a good religious upbringing. I was taught to talk to my higher power like an imaginary friend as a little child. I mean, I was taught to sit and listen that he might have something to say back to me as a little child. I mean, it was good training. And then somebody convinced me, this imaginary friend and chatting, it was like writing a letter to Santa Claus, right? I mean, this is fantasy stuff. And why didn't I grow up and start depending on myself? And I did that. And this is where it got me, you know? And this is where it got me. I spent about 20 years too smart for any of this stuff, man. Science and technology and man, you know, da-da-da-da. And then a series of events, thank you, brought me back. And I developed this pretty good prayer life based on what I was raised with. And I entered into a year of meditation, of daily meditation on scriptures with people in my faith community. And I believe to this day that that year of meditation is what broke my denial, is what brought me back. I'm convinced of it, okay? But sometime during that year, I was in and out of AA, okay? And I went to this meeting at a rehab, a local rehab. And I went there because I figured, who could I possibly know there? I didn't want anybody, you know, that I would know, you know, the brownie leader, the softball coach, you know. I didn't want anybody to see me that I might know. So I go to this open meeting at this rehab, and they had an incident the night before, and they had gotten drugs on the floor, and the speaker didn't show up. And what happened is the counselor wound up being the speaker. He told his story for about 30 seconds and then screamed at them the rest of the hour. And I'm, like, dying. And it never occurred to me that I could have just gotten up and left. Okay, I was probably the only one in the room who could have gotten up and left. But right? I mean, it never occurred to me to just leave. And it was just the most horrible experience that I thought that I could possibly have. And I was so angry at the experience. And the next day, like, I'm still hungover because it was, like, a big one that made me go there. And the next day, I'm still sick and I'm still hungover. And I was sitting in meditation. And I first began the interval with a prayer, and it was an angry prayer. It was, what the hell do you want out of my life? You know, I don't know what to do about this. I've tried that stupid AA. I don't belong there. What the hell do you want out of me? It was one of those prayers, you know, like an honest prayer, okay? You know? And then I sat quiet. I sat quiet. And let me tell you, something came over me. It was so strong. It just about lifted me out of the seat, it felt. And the overwhelming urge was to get to a meeting. And I tell you, that's not my natural thinking. So I believe that was my higher power communicating to me, okay? And I did. I picked up a meeting book. I went like an hour away from home because I don't want to be seen. And somewhere in that meeting, it was a step meeting. I didn't know what steps were, you know. But in the course of whatever they were talking about, some woman shared an experience of driving drunk in the car, in blackout, with her children in the car. And she described it so vividly, it stirred a memory that had been buried so deeply that I didn't even know was there, of when my kids were maybe 8 and 10, something like that. They're grown by now, but maybe they were 8 and 10, and we had spent the weekend down the shore, just me and the girls. And I had apparently bought a bottle of scotch, and I had apparently gone with them to carry out, take home Chinese food, and brought them back to the motel room driving on the wrong side of the highway, and I'm dodging headlights with my kids in the car. and they are old enough to be terrified, but not old enough to know how to get me to stop driving. Okay, now they told me about this incident the next morning, and I thought they were making it up. How I could never do such a thing. Okay, however, I have to tell you, there was an empty bottle of scotch, and there were empty Chinese food containers. So how could two children make up such a thing? Okay, so it must have happened. But I buried that memory so deep. I never, never knew it was there until this woman shared in this meeting. And that broke my denial. I started crying. I started shaking. I started blabbering. I think it was a moment of grace. I mean, that's how God works. That's how God works. That's the one that made me stay. Okay? That's the one. They stopped the step. I mean, they went to the first step. They read from the step book. They talked about raising the bottom. You know, how many people come and get sober before they hit the absolute bottom. And wouldn't it be nice if I got sober before I killed somebody? Because I'm driving in blackout. That's my way of, that's how I am. Wouldn't it be nice if I came in before I killed myself or killed my kids or killed somebody? Wouldn't that be nice if I got sober before that happened? Because a lot of people get sober after that happened. I've met quite a few during my years. So they convinced me to stay. But I still had a hard time with these first two steps. Let me tell you, I still, you know, I wasn't as bad as you guys. You know what I mean? I just, sometimes this stuff happened, not all the time. I went through a lot of sponsors. I mean, everybody's tried to hook me up and they didn't do it right. You know, I mean, just nobody did it, you know, the way I thought it should be done anyway. There were things I heard. I'm sure they said a lot of good solution stuff. I don't think I heard any good solution stuff, that's for sure. I'm not sure what they said and what they didn't say. But to tell you the truth, I know that one thing that they said a lot is just stop drinking and you'll feel better. Your life will get better and you'll feel better. Just stop drinking. Well, in retrospect, I have to say they were probably right. Once I stopped drinking, I felt anger better. I felt depression better. Yeah, I felt anxiety better. I felt fear better. I felt guilt tremendously better. Okay? I got sicker and sicker and sicker, going to 2 and 3 and 4 meetings a day because now I can't keep a job. You know, I'm a mess. I came in, I stopped drinking, I did the don't drink, go to meetings, stick with us kind of thing, and I got sicker and sicker and sicker in the rooms of AA. Now, I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. I don't know who was saying what. All I know is I wasn't hearing any solution, okay? That's all I know. That's all I know. I should also mention to you, in the 25 years prior to this about, I also had a long medical history of going to all kinds of different kinds of doctors trying to figure out what's wrong with me. Okay? I mean, what's wrong with me? I have depression. I have, I lose my temper. Not physically, but screaming like a wild woman. I have mood swings that are off the wall. Okay? And I went to a lot of different doctors. I have a lot of different diagnoses. Let me tell you. I mean, I've been diagnosed manic depressive, bipolar, chemical imbalance. I mean, all kinds of stuff. I went to a lot of different kinds of doctors. And whatever kind of doctor I went to, whatever was their expertise, that was my diagnosis. It was amazing. 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 When I went to the psychologist, I had to analyze my childhood. Nothing wrong with that. There was a lot of stuff that needed analyzing, for sure. When I went to the psychiatrist, I had to be on meds. I could never live without meds. I could never live without meds. Let me tell you, I haven't had a med in a long time. And, well, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, okay? I'm getting ahead of myself. When I went to the neurologists, okay, I had too many head injuries. Now, I never connected with them, the head injuries and the car accidents and the drinking. That never went quite together for me to explain to a doctor, okay? But whatever was their expertise, that was my diagnosis, okay? It was very, very confusing. And I used to pray, God, please send me to the right doctor. I can't figure this out. Okay, send me to the right doctor, please. Little did I know that Dr. Bob was the right doctor that I needed. Okay? Little did I know Dr. Bob had my solution, okay? I didn't know. At 2.5 years, not drinking in AA, going to a lot of meetings, my mood swings were so off the wall. My family got so scared, okay? I wound up being locked up against my will in a psych ward. They came with handcuffs and carted me off to a psych ward. 2.5 years not drinking in AA, going to meetings 2 and 3 and 4 a day. And they cart me off to a psych ward. The nerve of them. Okay. I mean, let alone when I finally did get through the steps to look at my own behavior and realize how scared they must have been. But at that time, the nerve of them, okay? They were drinking. I wasn't, right? Thank God I had hooked up at that point, just prior to that point, with the sponsor who still sponsors me to this day. Thank God I'd hooked up with a big book thumping sponsor, okay? I had been praying, God, please send me the right sponsor, because I couldn't get the right sponsor, I couldn't get the right doctor, I couldn't get the right anything. So God, please help me with this. And I had hooked up with this woman that is still my sponsor to this day. And she happened to be very good friends with an attorney in the program. And together they sprung me out after a few days. It happened to be Thanksgiving weekend, and the regular doctors weren't around, and whatnot. But they sprung me out of there. And I thank God to this day, because if they hadn't, I think I would have spent the rest of my life doped up on meds, without a chance to get clear. And I'm very, very grateful for that experience, that not to get in, but to be sprung out, okay? That one made me real ready to do anything, okay? Anything. And I guess that was my step two, because I came out of there so broken and so disillusioned. And I can remember sinking on the floor on my hands and elbows and crying and say, I don't trust anybody. I don't trust my family. I don't trust the doctors. I don't trust this brand new sponsor. You know, I don't trust a living soul on this earth. I only trust you, God. Take my life and do what you want with it. I don't give it darn anymore. You know? I think that was my step two. Okay? I think so. Okay? But that began the road to recovery, because this woman was a big book thumper right from the get-go, okay? She looks like this sweet little old lady, but I'm telling you, I mean, sometimes I would call her with these issues. She'd say, why don't you go read step three and call me back, please? Step three, what does that have to do with what I'm telling you about? I have an issue here. You know, no. Save your issues. We'll talk about them as they come up in the step work, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she took me through the steps, and my life became transformed, okay? When we talk about the third step, well, I did that one. I know that one. Thank you. Let's just get to work. And she said, no, okay? And she had me read pages 60 to 63, okay, which just our book describes the third step. No, I had turned my life and my will over to the care of my God. I mean, I had done that, okay? She said, why don't you read it from this perspective, okay? And she had me read step three, but she said, don't read it with the words here. Put your name in it and put the name of anybody in your life that you might not be totally comfortable with at this particular moment, okay? So I was thinking in terms of my family who just locked me up in the psych ward. You know, I wasn't feeling real comfortable with them at that moment, okay? So she had me say, like, most people, Lori tries to live her life by self-propulsion. Now, Lori is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Okay? Lori is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the place. Lori's always telling her grown children how to live their lives. Okay? Lori knows exactly what they should do to straighten their recovery problems out. You know, Lori knows exactly what everybody should be doing. And instead of showing up at the rehearsal to read my own script, okay, Lori thinks she's the director and she's trying to tell everybody else how to read their scripts. Whoa, this is starting to ring a little bit true, okay? Once I'm thinking specifically in terms of my family that's just had me locked up, okay, and I'm thinking about explosions that I've had with them over recent intervals, you know, this is ringing true a little bit. Then she had me even like examine my prayer life. I mean, I had a prayer life. But when I looked at it from this perspective, now I started to see that even in my prayer life, I'm telling God the plan. Okay? Dear God, fix this one, change that one, make this happen, make that happen. I'm telling him the plan and trying to persuade him to implement my plan. You know, whew, I'm glad God listens no matter where we're at. Okay? I'm glad for that. Because I learned a new way to pray through her. You know, God, what can I do for your plan today? And you don't even have to explain to me what the plan is, okay? Just what do you want me to do today for whoever shows up in front of me today, okay? Show me what to do for your plan. You know, use me as an instrument in your plan. That's a different way of praying. That's a different way of praying. So my third step did take on a different view. And I'm, I'm not timing real well. I'm sorry. Well, step 12, we're saying, is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of working these steps. And for me, steps 4 to 9, that was where the spiritual awakening came for me. Okay. In my fourth step, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery, okay, to solve my problem. Before the fourth step, anytime I was upset, it was something you did to me. Okay, and you better change or else, you know, ba-bum. As we know, in the fourth step, as it's described in the big book, we make our columns and we look at all the stuff you did to me, and then I have to turn it around and look at where's my part. And I always have a part, no matter what. Even stuff that's done in childhood. Now, what does a child have? Okay, we have no part when there's stuff done to us in childhood. But my sponsor explained this is as an adult. And as an adult, I have a choice no matter what the incident is. I can look at the incident and relive it and reignite the flames and dwell on the memory and the hurt, okay? Or I can choose to pray for that person, know that that person was a sick person, and pray that God has mercy. And God looks at that person the way I hope God looks at me, which is trying to see what's good in the person. And trying to overlook what's bad in the person. Whoa. Or if the person is really damaging, you know, what happened to damage that person so? You know. My sponsor used meditation with me a lot, okay, because we both come from the same background and we both have the same spiritual disciplines. And so right from the beginning we used meditation. And she had me take, like, particularly difficult family members and get pictures of them as little children and meditate on the sweet innocence of them as a child and then wonder what happened in their life to change that sweet, innocent child. What happened in my life? I certainly didn't wind up pure as the fallen snow. You know, what happens to any of us in life that changes us? The other image for meditation that helped me so much with my fourth step work was meditating on pictures, family pictures, that included my grandbabies. Okay, now I can't look at my grandkids and not get all warm and fuzzy, okay? And my sponsor explained you can't hold love and anger in your heart at the same time. So get those photos that include those grandchildren, put them all over your house, meditate on them, and see if your heart doesn't change towards these people, okay? And they did. It did. The fourth step, resentment. I came to look at resentment as a placeholder. I heard this in one of the rooms. I thought, what do you mean a placeholder? A placeholder for a life skill I've not yet developed to protect myself. Because there are personalities, let's face it. I mean, there's people out there that are not very nice, okay? And my issue is I need to learn the life skills to protect myself or to learn how to sidestep or avoid rather than confront. Or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, how do I find peace in my life? It's not by trying to change them, that's for sure. So I better learn some life skills to deal with the difficult people in my life, whether it be in my home, in my work, you know, wherever. Okay? 6 and 7, man, those are the change steps. That's where the change comes from. 4 and 5, I'm just learning what's my part in any upset. Okay, once I can see my part, I really wanted to change. I didn't have trouble with step 6. I really wanted to find a way to have peace in my life. For step 7, the prayer in the book is beautiful. But my sponsor had me supplement that prayer with very specific step seven prayers for the difficult people on my four-step list. For example, one of my step seven prayers was for a particular member, God, you know how she gets under my skin. You know. Okay. Please help me not show it on my facial expression, in my tone of voice, in my body language. Please help me engage with this person as if I'm going to go talk to my best friend and change the energy that I'm putting out, the negative energy, just at the thought of being in the same room. Wow. I did that. Prayed it every time before I was going to be with that person. And you know something? That relationship changed. That relationship changed. Honestly, it changed. My real spiritual awakening came in 8 and 9. I mean, I thought the spiritual awakening was for the people that came in that didn't have a relationship with God. And I understand why they needed a spiritual awakening. I didn't really think I needed one, okay? But, I mean, you know, really, I had this perfect spiritual life, okay? But at least I thought, okay? But what happened to me in steps 8 and 9, what happened to me was incredible. I started to understand and experience that God actually intervenes in my life when I invite him to, and I never realized that. Because no sooner did I have names on my 8-step list, no sooner had I made that list of people to whom I needed to make amends, people started showing up on my doorstep. It was unbelievable, unbelievable. The week after I made my 8-step list, which was the same day as my 5th step, just like it says in the book, you know, you go home, you're quiet for a while, you pray the prayer 6 and 7, and you start the 8-step list, okay? The following week, I'm at a workshop for my job. Somebody walks in, a guy that had moved out of the area 5 years before. He's on my 8-step list. He has no business even being at that workshop. It's not his area of expertise. I don't know why he was there, okay? But he was there. And I got to have lunch with him. I wasn't really ready. But, you know, I said what I had to say. It was this wonderful, beautiful healing experience, okay? I had said some horrible things to him at a point of being nutso, and he put his hand on mine. He said, you know something, I knew you were going through a difficult time. I knew what you said had nothing to do with me. It never's really bothered me. I said, yeah, but it's bothered me every time I think of you. You know, and that was dissolved. In that moment, it was gone. Man, I got to call my sponsor. Man, you can't believe what happened here. Bah, 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 bah. She goes, what do you mean you can't believe? This is how it works. This is how it works, okay? Wow. Shortly after that, a family member lives on the other side of the country, had business in my hometown, had to come in for the weekend. No wife, no kids, no wedding, no funeral, okay? I get to chit-chat with him for 3 days. You know, I wasn't ready, okay? I'm still mad at something that happened when I was 6 years old, right? I mean, I'm just not ready, okay? So I told my sponsor this. It says in the book, you got to be ready, okay? She says, you're not ready. You're not ready. He's on your 8-step list. God has delivered him onto your doorstep, and you're telling me you're not ready? She said, why don't you ask your God to make you ready? You know, you may not have this chance again any too soon, okay? I mean, you'll get it again, but it may not come too soon. Why don't you just do it, okay? So we did small talk for 3 days, and I'm driving him back to the airport. You know, I thought, oh. So I said what I thought I should be saying. It didn't go well. It wasn't warm and fuzzy, okay? It was a rub your nose in it. Okay, it was just a nasty experience, nasty. And I let him out the airport, bye-bye, you know. And I got home, I said to my sponsor, blah, 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 you know. And she says, what? You think you're the only sick puppy in this family? You know? He's not equipped to have this kind of a conversation. Why don't you say a prayer for him? You know, he's nowhere near anywhere that you'll ever be spiritually. Why don't you just say a prayer for it? Wow. You know, my relationship with him improved incredibly. Incredibly. I have to report to you, I'm at peace with everybody. Absolutely everybody. And I don't think they changed a whole bunch, okay? I don't think so. You know, incredible. No matter where I'm not saying every day. Okay, but I am at peace with everybody. So step 11, I'm almost, 10 and 11, I can't skip 10 and 11. I've learned how to reflect in the course of the day. I've learned how whenever there is an upset, thank you, God, I've learned finally how to keep my mouth shut for the most part, okay? And go off and, you know, lock myself in the ladies' room or call somebody if I have to or at least go into prayer. Most times, 9 times out of 10, I do keep my mouth shut, not always. And I learn to look at, you know, what can I do differently to be more at peace? And that's been working real fine. Okay. Step 11, you know, it's my favorite. I mean, absolutely. I do have a regular meditation discipline. I do meditate every morning. I try every night, not always every night. But, and I do pause often through the day. I do pause often and invite God in. I say a lot of thank you prayers all day. I really do. What's life like for me in recovery now? I mean, life's good. Okay. I did these steps with this sponsor, just coming out of the hospital at 2.5 years sober, okay? I've recently redone them formally with a solution-based big book study group who wanted everybody to do them again with them to make sure that, you know, that it was done right. And I resisted that a little bit in the beginning, and my sponsor said, why would you not, right? I mean, hook up with people that take it seriously, right? So I did. I had to say the set-aside prayer a lot. You know, God, please help me set aside everything I know about you, everything I know about AA, everything I know about the steps. Help me to set that aside and go through this as if I'm going through it for the first time so that I can have a new experience of you. That's my goal, a new experience. Well, this group, they did add a few things to what's in the big book. When it came to the fourth step inventory, instead of just writing down your resentments, you had to write down everybody you ever met in your life. Okay, what? Okay, what? And basically, you know, meditate on each interval of your life each day, you know. And then from that inventory to pick out the resentments and the fears and whatnot. I don't think I talked about fears. I'm sorry. Boy, fears has been a big one for me. This past year, I have some incredibly scary things going on with my family. I mean, just things totally beyond my control. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone back to page 68 and done exactly what it says on page 68. You know, write my fears on paper. You know, ask why do I have them. Ask God to please remove my fears and direct my attention where you would have it be. And when I'm sincere in that prayer, it's never go rescue your family. You know, it's always get busy, do something else, and the fear is removed. But I tell you, I have to do it over and over and over again. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to leave that out. Reworking the steps. Okay. Well, I'm living in 10 and 11 for a long time, 10, 11, 12. I sponsor a lot of women. I do a lot of stuff. When I went through these steps again, okay, when I'm meditating on each time of my life to identify where possible resentments might be, but meditating and trying to image everybody I've ever met from every time of my life, I had the most incredible experience. What happened? Because I'm not flooded with resentments anymore. I'm not choked up with fears anymore. What happened in that meditation, and went on for weeks, was childhood memories came to the surface, happy childhood memories that I never even knew were there, never even knew they were there, okay? Wonderful memories. It was a trip, let me tell you. I looked forward to it each day. It was an incredible trip. I know now what our book says, when the resentments block the sunlight of the spirit. Let me tell you, I understand what that means. When I did the fourth step the first time, I think everybody I knew was on that fourth step, okay? Really, I had a resentment against everybody. When I did it again this last time, it was incredible. And the fruits of that labor came. My mother passed away a year ago last summer. And I got to spend the last 6 weeks of her life with her in the hospital. I'm a teacher. She was considerate enough to get sick over the summer. So, I mean, really, we spent, because I don't live anywhere near her anymore. You know, I got to spend 6 weeks with her. She passed the end of August, which was a very conscious decision of hers. She didn't want to go on dialysis. She didn't want to be intubated. I mean, she had good reasons to allow herself to pass. And I was there, and you know, and at the end, administering the morphine and just kind of helping her phase out. And what came to me were all those wonderful childhood memories that I was able to talk her out with. Ma, remember when you were the brownie and we had the brownie leader and we had the day camp? And do you remember the first time you took me to the theater and we saw My Fair Lady in Manhattan? And all those memories, the flood of those happy memories. Oh, what a beautiful experience. It's just incredible. Incredible experience. Incredible. So life in recovery for me is very, very good. My sixth and seventh step, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, okay? My character defects, I've come to look at other things, other addictions in my life. I've dealt with a smoking addiction. I'm a member of Nicotine Anonymous. I've dealt with a sugar addiction. I'm a member of Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, I go to Al-Anon. Everybody in my family has something, okay? I mean, I am 12 stepped out my ears, okay? But let me tell you, it just keeps getting better and better and better. I'm not drinking for 18 years. I'm not smoking for 14 years. I'm holding off 65 pounds for 13 years. I'm working out at the gym now. I have more energy than I had 20 years ago. I feel younger than I felt 20 years ago. It's incredible. Life in recovery is so good. I sponsor a lot of women in a lot of different recoveries, whatever problem, yeah. I'll walk that path with you, I'll tell you. I'm real grateful. I'm just so grateful. I've found a life beyond my wildest dreams. Our book says we get rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. This is so good. So if you're new, and if you don't think you probably don't belong here because you didn't drink like us, just keep coming around. You know, just keep coming around. Keep listening. I heard don't leave before the miracle happens. Oh, because if you stay around, there's a miracle here. So that's it.